Blog Talk Radio.
After an unbelievable Super Bowl 49, we survey the aftermath on the End Zone Falcon Zone Super Pro Football Show. And that's right, if you guys are dancing along like we are, you know it's time for the End Zone Falcon Zone Super Pro Football Show. I am your host, Jeremy the Impact York, joined once again by the King ACL and Reggie Walker, who we are glad to have back, and the coach, Haywood Hill. How we doing, guys?
Doing good, Jeremy. Glad to be back.
Excellent, Jeremy. Excellent.
Hey, that's even better. I think we're all excellent because we may actually get some sleep this week.
Sounds like a winner.
Because you know,
I don't know yet. I don't know if I'm going to sleep as of yet. I'm still blown away. But that's what we're doing on the show.
I will definitely agree with you there. And of course, you know, there's still many coordinator jobs available that you could possibly take. So I could understand why the phone may be ringing a lot. But
I must admit, I have actually received a phone call from someone.
Really? Wow. Then off air, I may ask you about that. But you know, obviously, to protect the innocent, we'll leave it off of here for now.
Yeah, we don't want that team to get all bent out of shape knowing Coach Hill's coming either.
And we don't want our loyal listeners to be saddened by the fact that, you know, Coach may not appear on the show so much because he would be running a team.
Well, yeah, he'd actually have to pick a team this year. How about that?
Well, since you brought up picking teams, let's go ahead and get that one out of the way. Obviously, Reg, you got out to a big lead during the regular season, and Coach caught you and passed you right there at the end. And then technically, you were mathematically eliminated from the from our postseason win because you were a game behind me and Coach. Not technically, because we could have tied. But since the aftermath of that one, and really wish you guys would have listened to me on the Patriot thing, but since you didn't, I will happily take the postseason Pick'em Award by one game over you, Coach, and two over you, Reggie. But overall, it was a lot of fun picking games for you guys, and we always have some pretty good heated discussions on each game.
Yeah, I was given some advice and told that, you know, when they're your friends, you can't beat them too much in the ground, you know, especially when it's something that they do. So next year, I gave it to you guys this year. Next year, I'm not going to have any mercy. How about that?
Whatever helps you sleep at night, well, I mean, I'm good with that.
Well, you know, I will go as far as to say this, Reggie. I haven't had an opportunity as of yet to privy host to the dark side, but I'm going to make sure that I get an opportunity to do so off air on some interesting things that I saw. And most definitely, once we get into the Super Bowl, lots and lots and lots of things to talk about. I can assure you.
Oh, there are definitely a lot to talk about. And before we get into reviewing the Super Bowl 49 and the fact that it could quite possibly be one of the most entertaining ones of all time, let's go on and get some of these lawyer-related things out of the way as far as some of these stories going on, because some of them are not – they're either not surprising or not, you know, super important as far as the NFL going forward. A couple of them are, but we'll get into that. First one off the block, Warren Sapp was arrested over the weekend. Apparently, the morning after the Super Bowl, I believe around 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, he was charged with soliciting a prostitute. What do you guys think about Warren Sapp here?
Well, I'm going to allow Coach Hill to speak on it first because he has the more diplomatic probably the most diplomatic point of view, and then I'll speak on behalf of myself and Falcon Nation after that.
Well, thank you, Mr. Walker. I do appreciate it. To be honest with you, it's a misfortune. It is truly a misfortune. I mean, one of the things that players, and he's a former player, a great player, Hall of Famer, on top of that, is that you are always a public figure. You never shared your ability to be a public figure and to have impact. And the thing that behooved me was that there was a warning. There was a warning, if I'm not mistaken, a week prior to the Super Bowl, of a basketball player that ran into the same type of incident. There's been a history of that. If you go back and look at the Falcons, back to Eugene Robinson. So, again, whether you feel that you are a role model or a public figure, and even more so, guys, with today's technology, you cannot get around the fact that people have camera phones, Instagrams, Twitter, Facebook, Snapshot, and, I mean, how many more multitude of these social media outlets do you have that your face will end up somewhere in less than 3 seconds? Be very careful about what you do in the public, because it can come back and will come back to haunt you.
I guess we'll turn it over to you, Reggie.
Yeah, that's the nice side of it. So, I mean, first of all, let me echo Coach's statement. I think it's definitely unfortunate for him being a Hall of Famer. He has lost his job. NFL Network, I think, fired him within hours of this incident. On a more serious note, I mean, just the very nature, you've had Ray Rice's incident this year. You've had, you know, the Kraken's incident this year. You've got Darren Sharper's incident that's taking place right now. I mean, there's just a lot going on around just violation of women, if you will, I mean, regardless of the situation. But what I can say is in my Twitter feed kind of blew up right after this, was as a Falcon fan, it could not have happened to a nicer guy. Why? Because we no longer have to hear his tirades about the Falcons and how much he hates us or despises us. But, you know, outside of that professionally, I mean, it is a very unfortunate situation because, again, I mean, the guy has a gold jacket, and that's what everybody's going to remember him for, at least here, you know, in the near future. So good luck to wherever he ends up. I know he's also having some child support issues, I believe. So, I mean, it's just a bad situation for him all the way around.
Yeah, and as somebody who followed Tampa as closely as I did for many, many years, including many Warren Sapp years, he kind of had the reputation that maybe he was the type of player who was playing about 10 years later than the era he should have been in. But at the same time, you know, not condoning any of the stuff he has or hasn't done, he was always known as he would show up and play all day long and be the Pro Bowl, All-Star, Hall of Fame that he was, but he had issues off the field between possible drinking at times and partying, and then he's had a few little kind of blips on the map like this one here. So I guess
right,
the serious...
He even had an incident, if you guys remember, he didn't play in the Orange Bowl in his final year at Miami because he failed a drug test. I mean, so it, you're right. It has been a history of the off-field stuff. I think what probably has a lot of people, and I've seen some comments from some of the players, specifically Eric Weddle and Shockey, the former tight end, that you remember he accused him of snitching on the Saints about the headhunting gate that went down. I mean, those guys didn't have anything – compassionate to say about him, and I think that's probably what chapped a lot of people is, you know, here's a guy with one of the biggest mouths about talking trash about folks, you know, and saying just the wrong things at times, getting caught up in something like this.
Yeah, and kind of the serious note on it, and it's kind of the general theme for this and the next couple of people we'll talk about is, hopefully they recognize that they do have problems and they're doing the best to try to, you know, seek the help they need, or that maybe somebody, even a former teammate, could reach out to them and try to get them to make a little bit better choices. Because, I mean, for the most part, yeah, Warren Sapp, does say what's on his mind, and sometimes it's not something we necessarily need to hear in that moment. But overall, he's still a good guy, and he's done a lot for the, especially the Tampa community and his work through NFL Network. So, I mean, for the most part, Warren, we hope you get better, get your stuff in order, and just start being a regular human being again. And as far as making good choices, that leads us to, well, we'll go to the Ravens guy next. The Ravens released nose tackle Terrence Cotton. Now, typically this wouldn't be that big a deal except for he is a pretty good player. But this follows the, I don't know if he was charged or actually convicted with animal cruelty charges, which immediately got him released. Have you guys heard any more about this?
No, I just caught wind of the story not too long ago, and again, it is unfortunate. Because he's obviously going to come up against some kind of disciplinary action under the new bargaining agreement, but it is unfortunate. He's a heck of a player out of when he was at Alabama, and I think he was going to end up becoming one of the more premier defensive tackles. So, that again, like Coach Hill mentioned, I mean, in this age of technology, these people have got to understand, you know, that has changed the game. That you can no longer just do whatever. Big Brother is truly always watching.
Yeah, I would like to say add to that, Reginald. And Jeremy, if you remember at the beginning of last year, as a matter of fact, maybe our third or fourth segment on the show, that was one of the things that we talked about. If you remember when I went back to the situation in Miami, policies are created, guys, as a result of something happening. Policies don't just create themselves. And so this incident has happened before, i.e. Michael Vick. And look at that. And so, again, look at all the misfortune and the money that was lost as a result of Mr. Vick's situation. Now, who would by chance go right back and possibly replicate anything remotely close and not think that the consequences won't be even more severe than what Mr. Vick had to go through himself? So, again, you know, Like you just said, Reginald, the biggest thing now is social media. Social media will find you quickly. You have reporters on every corner. You're waiting on somebody to take a snapshot that you can sell to some magazine for, you know, $25,000, $30,000 sometimes. You have to be – now when you walk out in the public, you have to know that everybody's watching you whether you want them to watch you or not.
Yeah, and just to kind of piggyback kind of what you're saying about the social media thing, I've heard many former players, but the two that stuck out the most was because they gave almost the same identical answer. Troy Aikman and Michael Irvin, when asked, I believe Dan Patrick asked him separately, different shows he did. He asked if the social media age had been back when they played, you know, how different would it be? And both of them pretty much said, we probably wouldn't have won near as much and most of us would still be in jail.
Wow, and that speaks volumes. And what's unfortunate too is, and I've had the privy, unfortunately, to talk to a couple of kids that are in this situation. You know, that type of mindset where you feel like you are above the crowd or above the fold as an athlete because you're a premier athlete. I mean, that stuff's starting to trickle down to these guys, and these guys in high school ranks are just conducting themselves as if, you know, nothing can. There's no consequences because I'm good on the football field or I'm great on the basketball court. And this is where I kind of hope, you know, that some of the players or even some of the coaches start to you know, get back into that Tony Dungy mode and start kind of addressing some of this stuff behind the scenes.
Yeah, I can assure you guys that from high school to Division I and or college football across this nation, as well as all professional sports, they're going to address this thing with the social media. They're going to address it. I promise you, you're going to find it almost to the point that they're not going to even get a chance to be able to use these accounts until after the seasons are over. So just be prepared to see a lot come down with professional sports and social media.
Yeah, and they've actually already kind of implemented that, Coach, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, with them, you know, being heavily fined if they tweet during the game or within a certain amount of time for the game. So it's already kind of, the track has been laid.
Yeah, and like you're saying, there's a lot of colleges and even high schools that the colleges in particular either won't allow the cell phones anywhere near a practice facility or anything, or even during game day. And then some of them say, hey, you're not allowed to be on social media while the season's going on.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's protecting them. I mean, it's just the world we live in now. They're both the gift and the curse, right? The information age.
Exactly. It's, you know, with knowledge comes power, and with power comes responsibility, and sometimes people can't handle them.
Absolutely.
But somebody who I think is kind of handling his demons a little bit is Johnny Manziel, who the reason why he was so quiet during Super Bowl week, because I, for one, couldn't believe I didn't see him on any kind of media thing going on that week, on nobody's show or anything like that. As of Wednesday before the Super Bowl, he checked himself into a treatment facility for alcohol. And as far as I know, everything's still going well there for him. The most important thing to me with these athletes and with people in general is you have to recognize that there's an issue or a problem, and then you can do something about it. Well, it seems like he's already to step two of that, trying to do something about it.
Right, and I commend Mr. Manziel for doing that because he was definitely headed down the wrong path. He was already starting to get that reputation that it's kind of hard to shake. I mean, I think even Cleveland is probably taking a reverse course on how they're going to handle Mr. Hoyer in his free agency, especially with Mr. Shanahan leaving and requesting his release, and just some of the teammates, and also on top of the whole Josh Gordon thing all over again. I mean, I'm glad to see, like you said, that he's taken a step forward in trying to address that before his career is over, before it starts.
Yeah, and I don't know all of the intricacies of what he has done because I haven't had a chance to follow the story just, you know, most recently, guys. You all can privy me to that. But one thing I will say is this. Fame is a drug. It is as addictive as any drug that's out there, and a lot of people can't handle it. And that's why the first 3 years of the NFL are so critical. If you notice, your rookie contract is structured around 3 years, if not up to 5 years. If you can survive, I think that a lot of these young men, when they come into the league, they are so overwhelming for them. It is unlike anything that you can prepare for. You cannot prepare for fame, and you cannot prepare for becoming a public figure so fast all the time. I mean, yes, you play at let's just take Georgia here locally, or Georgia Tech, and you're a star there. But when you take it and you put it on the NFL stage, amongst other stars and doors and that are open up to you, and opportunity and people that you meet, it can be overwhelming. And you have to have a good team around you that you keep you grounded. And I think Mr. Manziel realized just how fast you can enter the NFL and exit it all in a year, in a quick year.
Yeah, that is definitely true. And while we're on the subject of the Browns, I mean, I really feel bad for Browns fans, because just when they have a season like they did, where they're showing so much promise as to the future, they still had a lot of question marks. But one question mark is an exclamation point right now, as Josh Gordon's punishment was handed down for him violating and failing a drug test last week, and he will be gone for at least the calendar year.
Yeah, and just to clarify it wasn't actually drugs. It was alcohol, which, I mean, is a drug, and no doubt, but it wasn't just necessarily the exact same offense. But, again, another situation where, you know, and I don't know if you guys read the story about Titus Young, the receiver that was playing for Detroit, that they just couldn't get a handle on. They're finding out, you know, this guy had some CTE involved, but on a whole other planet. There's got to be some address given, or some energy given to the whole psychoanalyst or psychoanalysis and some of the issues going on mentally with a lot of these players, man. There's Josh Gordon's got some things going on that is going to require someone to stop take football out of the equation and figure out what is going on with this guy, as with many other players, and put his health and his wellness first to get beyond this and figure out what's really going on with this guy. Because this repeat performance is just it's incredible, and somebody's got to do something about it.
Yeah, I agree, Reginald. I think that we talked about this the earlier part of last year, way through the segments last year, and I think this needs to go back as early as high school. I think a lot of it gets misdiagnosed at the high school level. College for sure picks it up, but again, you're going to see more of that at the D1 level. At the D1 AA, D2 level, I'm sure a lot of players slip through the cracks. And most definitely, they need to look at this. This has to be addressed outside of just it being something that happens once someone becomes a pro. I'm sure that if everyone was tested now with the test that could be given, you'd probably be surprised at some of the guys that probably would not pass this test currently now as a result of things that have happened to them in the past.
Yeah, and hopefully these four guys can get themselves straightened out, and it looks like Manziel may be ahead of the curve on at least the progression so far. And as far as, other examples of Josh Gordon in the league, Jacksonville has one in Justin Blackmon that is pretty much off the grid. He's in a facility right now, a treatment facility, but he's so far off the grid that most of the time the updates, instead of being daily or weekly, are usually monthly. But they're playing it that way on purpose, and I know that the owner down there, Shad Khan, wants to welcome him back when he's ready, but told him that if he needs anything, just to let him know.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. I mean, you could go all the way back to Jamarcus Russell. I mean, how many countless guys, that here's a first round number one overall draft pick, and the guys out of the league had the talent, but had these demons going on that football superseded all of those things, and it just never got addressed.
Well, it's like Coach said there. It's some people can handle the fame, and some can't. And sometimes you can kind of, beat the numbers a little bit with a little bit of help, and be able to handle it a little bit, but some of them can't, and that's why they have the demons and they're out of the league.
Yeah, unfortunate.
But we'll move on to we'll bring up the mood a little bit now that we've brought everybody down, I guess. Well, real quickly, short answer: is Josh Gordon a Cleveland Brown next year?
I don't think so. I think they're done.
Not at all. Not
yeah,
at all.
I
mean, the Cleveland fans are so embarrassed, guys. I saw a Cleveland fan hold up a sign that says, "Baltimore, take this team as well."
Wow.
That's
how bad it is in Cleveland right now. It is that bad. I think that the ownership group right now probably have some type of control room in which they're monitoring everything that comes in, that comes out about the situations there. With Manziel and with Gordon, and again, when we talk about Atlanta, and I know Reginald, you mentioned that Mr. Blake wants to take some risk on some players. He really means that's exactly what it is—a risk. You just don't know what you're going to get, and Atlanta is one of those cities that offers a lot of distraction. So you have to have the right people in place when you decide that you want to roll dice and take risks. Now, am I saying that everybody's going to be just choir boys in your locker room? Absolutely not. I mean, we know this. We have to have different elements to make up a football team. But I'm really concerned, guys, as a coach, with the level of issues that seem to be more psychological than they are anything else. I'm evaluating certain things when they're talking to players, and you're seeing this particular look in their face, and I'm watching their body language, and I'm watching how they're responding to things and or not responding to things. And I'm just really concerned with what's going on psychologically with a lot of the players in the league right now. What's driving, high violence and domestic violence, and what's driving suicide? What's driving, alcoholism and strong drug use? And, I mean, And with the, like we said, with the technology, as you mentioned earlier, Resident, which is your background, with all this that's out there, that you know you're not going to get away with this. I mean, you're getting caught twice as fast now. And it's like they still can't seem to get away from it. It's almost like it's like a bad dream that you're trying to wake up from, and you just can't seem to escape it right now.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I tell my children this all the time. This is their world. They don't know anything else. So asking them to stay away from it is not the answer. It's just going to have to be more of an emphasis placed on the awareness. But it all starts with these children, and I call them children because they are, you know, understanding that they are role models and that other people are looking at them. And if you don't have that kind of accountability being placed on you to get things done and do things the right way, then this is the result of it. So, I mean, we got to go back to some of the old values, I think, you know, and it, again, it has to start before they get to the pro level, like Jeremy said. You can't wait till they become pros to try to fix them because it's too late at that point.
That's definitely true. And to move to the more upbeat thing, and speaking of children, the children are the kid of, or the young son, I guess, of Chris Carter, Hall of Famer Chris Carter, Duron Carter, however you want to say it. I haven't heard which way to say it yet. But he's the wide receiver as well. Had kind of an odd journey, but he was signed by the Colts the other day. You guys have any thoughts on this?
I don't. I've been meaning to sit down and take a look at some of his film. Obviously, with his father being the Hall of Famer that he was and the great receiver that he was, hopefully, you know, he'll have an ounce. If he has an ounce of the talent his dad had, he should be fine. I think it'll be a good move for the Colts, especially, you know, considering that you know, they got some receivers there that are a little long in the tooth and they need somebody on the other side of T.Y. Hilton to kind of spread the field a little bit. So this may be one of those high-risk, high-reward situations. Hopefully, pulling for the young man, though.
Yeah, I agree, Reginald. I think he comes out of a great pedigree. I think his dad has groomed him very well. I think he's had an opportunity to see his dad's life and legacy, and I think he's going to have as much trouble as he might find. I think he'll be more than prepared, and I don't think the coach signed him unless they felt that he was a great talent.
Yeah, he kind of had a bunch of bumps and bruises in the road coming through college. Ended up at a handful of different colleges. Went undrafted. He had a tryout with the Vikings. Didn't get offered a contract. So he went up and played for the Montreal Alouettes of the Canadian Football League and, you know, proceeded to throw up some pretty good numbers. I believe he had over 1,000 yards receiving, 70 catches or so, and 7 touchdowns. And actually 5 receptions and 40 yards for the touchdown in the playoffs. So naturally, the Colts, who want to give Andrew Luck every weapon they can, saw the opportunity that this could not only help their team, you know, in the here and now and for a couple years to come, but you're bringing part of that legacy to the Colts franchise.
Absolutely. I hope it works out for them.
Definitely so. And next I wanted to go to the 2015 Hall of Fame class was announced. And I'm pretty much familiar with all the names, which is the first in a long time. Real quickly, I'll run through the list, and then we'll just kind of go over, you know, either the one you just thought, you know, either the one you're most excited for or the one that you thought should have been the slam dunk anyway. Here's the Hall of Fame class for 2015. You have Ron Wolf, Mike Tinglehoff, Will Shields, Junior Seau, Bill Polian, Charles Haley, Tim Brown, and Jerome Bettis.
For me personally, I was most excited, about both Jerome Bettis and Junior Seau. Obviously, the way Junior Seau's life, unfortunately, tragically ended. Excuse me, he was a heck of a football player. He was a great person. I did get a chance to meet him in person, and he is as nice as advertised, or was as nice as advertised. Jerome Bettis, same for him. You know, I've had some opportunities to sit down and have some conversation with him in a personal setting, and couldn't have happened to some better guys. Obviously, Ron Wolf and Bill Polian, two of the greatest GMs, period, especially Mr. Wolf. I mean, so Tim Brown, Haley, they all speak for themselves. I mean, again, this is one of the most complete classes, I think, in that usually you'll get a class where you get one guy that you say, maybe. But this isn't one of them. This is definitely one of those classes where they got them all right.
I agree. I think that this is probably the one of the best, if not the best class going into the Hall of Fame. You know, when we're talking about Tim Brown, he actually was my boss down in Texas with the team there, along with Mr. Polium and Mr. Wolf. And ironically enough, Mr. Polium, I met him by way of phone call because he actually reached out to me many, many years ago. And when he called me, guys, I was on I-20 and almost hung up my phone because I thought it was a joke. As a matter of fact, I think I did, and he called me right back. So, I mean, that's how down to earth he is as a guy. And as far as their ability to be in the upper administration of many organizations, and again with Mr. Wolf and his son Elliot, you know, is making his mark in Green Bay as well. I mean, I think they hit it. This committee really, really put this class together. And I could see where there were no mistakes made. They really, really put what I feel is probably the best class, one of the best, if not the best class in the whole thing for 2015.
Wow, if you guys don't just steal my thunder. No, by far the ones I'm super excited for. And, yeah, I could have easily made a case to even non-football fans or people who have never heard of these guys as to why any of these guys should be in the Hall of Fame. But I was always a Jerome Bettis fan. He's my type of running back. That's why I'm a Marshawn Lynch fan. I just like that, you know, has the speed but not afraid to just, you know, lower the boom on somebody and run right over you. Junior Seau, by far, like you said, Reggie, tragic how that the ending of his life was and everything. Hopefully they get it all straightened out and figured out, though, at least for his family. But, yeah, Coach, as you mentioned, I was going to say I was excited definitely for Tim Brown, the general manager of the Texas Revolution. While I'm on the subject, quick programming note from Impact Media. Revolution Zone will be firing up in 2 weeks, which will be a weekly show all about the Texas Revolution and some fun things going on with that. But, yeah, back to Tim Brown. I felt like he could have went in last year. Definitely a deserving guy. I was able to see his video of when they came and knocked on his hotel room and his family was there. And it's always cool to see that moment. I don't like quite that they come and tell you either, A, you're in, or B, you're not. I think they should, you know, maybe do that in a different way. But this by far will be a very fun and entertaining class. And I look forward to the stories you might hear from them.
Well, absolutely. I can't wait to hear Mr. Wolf and Mr. Polium's story and how they're going to address their speech for the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, definitely so. And producer's looking at me. Do we have a caller? Let's check real quick. Hello, you're in the end zone. Who are we speaking to?
Jeremy, it's Harper.
Oh, you snuck in on us, Harper.
I did.
Of course, I'll give you the after the fact introduction, I guess. Joining us right now from an undisclosed location because our radar didn't pick up the number, and we apologize for that. Former Falcon and current 929 The Game on air talent, Harper LaBelle. How you doing, Harper?
Great. I like the conversation so far. It looks like you guys are pretty much in agreement. Did anyone not get included in your Hall of Fame? I'm sure there's a couple folks that you were hoping would get a chance.
Well, Harper LaBelle wasn't included, but, you know, maybe next year.
We'll be waiting a long time. There'll be nobody left before that happens.
Yeah, I think you had other pressing matters. You couldn't attend the ceremonies this year, so, you know, maybe wait until next year on it.
You know, it's funny. I was able to befriend a few of the guys in baseball, and when Tom Glavine and Maddox were inducted last year, it was really a big thing, and they invited a lot of their teammates, and I ended up playing golf with a couple of guys that actually went to the Hall of Fame there in Cooperstown, John Rocker being one of them, and John had never been before, and he just talked about the awe of the whole thing, and it really was from a fan standpoint, even though he played and won a World Series and was a great player, he just said that he was in awe of the whole thing. And so there's still that little bit of a kid in all of us that thinks that this is really a cool thing. It's a very exclusive club, and for a number of different reasons, it's a great accomplishment, and these guys get a chance to fulfill that. It's an amazing process.
Yeah, you know what? It's interesting that you said that, Harper, because I got a chance to talk to Mark Ingram just right after he won the Heisman, and he mentioned the same thing about that. I mean, the guy was tearing up even after the fact at just the thought that he had won the Heisman, something that growing up as a kid, he said, hey, you know, this is kind of the pinnacle of being a football player. And so I can only imagine what it's like to put that gold jacket on. That has got to be a spectacular feeling.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys that cannot keep their eyes dry for a number of different reasons. I think that emotion for players nowadays is a little bit less, but notwithstanding, everybody goes through their own atypical story. Well, how much can I tell? I've only got a few minutes. I don't really get to thank anybody or everyone that I want to. But the recognition itself, and if you'll allow me just for a second, guys, I've befriended Len Pascarelli. I've got to know him over the years, and he's one of the voters, and he takes it very, very seriously. I know a couple years ago he was instrumental in getting Claude Humphrey in. He was the man that actually made the presentation in front of the group to say Claude should be in. I think he's doing Morton Anderson. He's working on that. And it's a year-by-year process, and thank goodness for a guy like Mort that it's a matter of when, not if, he becomes a member of the Hall. But notwithstanding, there's just some tremendous stories and a lot of reasons that this is a tremendous accomplishment for everybody. It's not easy to get in, but once you do, everybody seems to recognize that, hey, this was well worth the wait.
You know, and I wouldn't say snub, but Morton Anderson was one that came to mind a minute ago. You know, we were fortunate enough that he played so many years in Atlanta, and it, to me, there's kickers, and then there's that whole different breed, that top tier, the Morton Andersons, the Gary Andersons, the Adam Vinatieri now, and those such that just take it to a whole different level.
Right, and I think, Jeremy, I think it's just a matter of the process getting its head wrapped around an actual kicker being, inducted into the Hall of Fame. But, I mean, again, it's just a matter of time, like Harper mentioned. I don't think it's a matter of if, it's just when.
Yeah, I think the big breakthrough and the barrier there. I'm sorry, Rich, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
I was saying, Harper, I agree. I think that when you're looking at the process of what it takes for a player to even be selected, and then that process of, you know, nominating and being selected, I think that, it, you know, as time moves on, you're going to find that they're going to have to start looking at the totality of football teams and football players versus just the traditional, you know, positions that you looked at in the past.
Absolutely. And Harper, one other thing before we move on, for Jeremy moves on to our next great topic. I didn't know you were a golf player, so I'm going to have to get you out there to come out to my country club and see if maybe you can lose a couple of balls with me.
Thank you. Yes, I'll tear up some grass and hurt some trees with the best of them. That's part of what I do.
Well, then you'll be in great company because I do the same.
Well, the quick note on that is, Reggie, is will we have to check the inflation of said balls that you're going to lose?
No, but mine are pretty easy to find, though, because I use the fluorescent ones, so I can go in the woods and find mine very easily.
Yeah, I'm going to have to check both Reggie and Coach for their cleats, their golf shoes, to make sure there aren't any scuff marks, because I'm sure the foot wedge gets really active there about the fourth of the eighth hole, and that's just the start of it.
Yeah, I definitely feel like
I can get off the tee box. You have to watch me from throwing it from the tee. If I can get off the tee box, my short game's okay. It's that long stick that gets me every time.
I definitely smell a good golf game coming up in the near future. No telling the stories that'll get told on the course either.
I will save that for there. No, absolutely, guys. I mean, I've got a membership at one of the clubs here out in Henry County, one of the more exclusive clubs, and we can definitely get out there and have some lunch and hit it around. Coach, I know we can let you drive the cart until you learn the game, but, you know, to come out
with
it.
I would be glad to chauffeur.
But on to that subject that Reggie was teasing about. Harper, we were actually about to get into our review of the Super Bowl. And the first thing we're really going to do about it is just the overall takeaway you had from the game.
Well, let me put it this way. With 26 seconds to go, I'm sitting in my chair. I'm leaning forward. And when Russell Wilson threw that ball, I went, oh, no! I couldn't. I couldn't help but be emotionally involved. And I think from a viewer's perspective, I think the networks themselves, I know that they say that there were a larger number of TDs that had the game on than they've ever had before. And I would only think that you can't measure how many eyes were actually on it, because I was in the room with three others. I'm sure every bar room, I mean, you can't count how many people actually watched it. I would gather that it was not only the most viewed game, but arguably one of the top three or four games, period, in the history of the event. I just think it was well played on both sides. It was under-officiated, which in this case was probably a good thing. There were a few calls they missed, but they pretty much just let the guys play. And in terms of excitement, the thrill, the ending, I don't think they could ask for anything better than that. It was one of the best games I've seen in a long, long time.
From my perspective, Jeremy, I mean, I echo Harper said it best. It was definitely one of the better games. I think Coach had kind of, you know, framed it for us that, you know, that's kind of how the Super Bowls all kind of go. I just a quick story that kind of recaps how important it was or how funny it was. My mother, who couldn't tell you the difference very much between football and basketball, wandered downstairs just about the time of the last play, and so she stood there and watched it with us. My son happens to be a Patriots fan, by the way. So as they get down to the half-yard line and Russell Wilson throws his pass, and the rest of us are looking at each other like, did that just happen? My mother just out of the blue goes, okay, so why did they give the ball to that guy, number 24? He ran good. Why didn't they just give it to him again? Was a culmination of what everybody else was thinking in the room, and I'm sure we'll get into the aftermath behind all of that, but it was definitely better than the blowout that we saw last year, so I think that was it was a good game.
All right, Coach.
Okay, with my Kevin Hart face on, look at this. Did you see that? Look at this. Come here, look at this. That's what was on my mind. As I look at it from a coach's perspective, I, for the life of me, honestly, guys, cannot fathom why you would throw from the half-yard line. Now, there are scenarios, and there are the quarterback sneaks, and there are the leads, and there are the boots with the tight end. And because you played it hard, you know what I'm talking about, that tight end pass play that you have where you boot with the quarterback or you come with the fullback with a double tight end set. To me, I can't see how that game was lost on the half-yard line. Not with what Seattle was capable of doing. And I talk about the that famous play in the game that all Super Bowls carry, that the incredible play. The play where Kurt catches the ball three or four times from jumping in the air to hitting the ground to the ball bouncing around to he secures it. That particular play from a defensive coordinator perspective, the rub route would never be ran like that. Normally you take a delay of game, you back it up to the six, you give yourself the space to make the play. But in this case, if Mr. Wilson simply just snaps the ball and just goes right over the center's head, or even between his legs, it's over. The game is over. I don't think what people started to see in the game is what Seattle has began to do. They tend to corral and use a rugby-style push anytime Marshawn was caught in traffic. and they will go in and they'll kind of corral them, and then they will push the pile, you know, 3-4 yards, and then, you know, onto the ground they all will fall. So for the life of me, I cannot see that play. And here's what really threw my mind. When Coach Carroll, going in at halftime, guys, decide that he's not going to kick the field goal, and I'm sure you can follow me on this, Harper. He decides he's going to forego the field goal, and he's going to take a risk here and score the touchdown. We're going for the touchdown. Okay, normally in a game of this magnitude, with players being hurt, you take the 3 points, you're coming back out because you deferred, you march back down. If you can't score, you kick again for the 3 points, you're down by one, and it's a manageable game throughout, as long as you know, as the way it's been played out. So I was really, really shocked more at the play going in at halftime than at the end of the game. But at the end of the game, that's one of those plays where you go, I have no idea why that play was called, and I'm just being honest. It blows my mind, guys. That one blows my mind, I must admit.
All right, I'll try to remember all the things I was going to say, because I had a bunch mapped out the other day. I guess, first of all, you know, last week me and you talked, Coach, that this Super Bowl was going to be so close, it was going to come down to some kind of funny play, some kind of crazy something. So it could be a crazy onside kick, it could be a fumble, it could be something like that. And when that particular play happened, that's definitely that crazy play. But the funny thing was, of all the people that were over to watch the game, and we had a good handful. In fact, about, I think, over half of the fantasy league I play in, one of the main ones, a bunch of really good friends of mine. As people started to filter out to go home early, I was pretty much the only New England fan still left in the room. So when Russell Wilson took the ball for that final drive, I said, you know, this is probably pretty much over here. I still never count anybody out till I see zeros on the clock, though, so I'm not going to give up hope. And I caught so much crap from Seattle fans all the way up till that play, and I said, well, right here on the goal line, they're going to go lynch, 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 and punch it in. And when they threw the ball, everybody in the room just turned and looked at me. I said, I told you if they threw it, something was going to happen. But the main takeaway I took from this is, as you said, Harper, when that particular play happened, you just said, oh, no. Well, so did Pete Carroll. Exactly. He just, as soon as the ball went in the air and he saw that it was about to be an interception, off come the headset, he just bent over like, I can't believe this, and said, oh, no, to that one. But the other big takeaway was, on the other sideline, Tom Brady screaming like a little 9-year-old girl in absolute excitement. And if you're not sure that guy's passionate about the game, I think screaming like a little girl that you just won the Super Bowl definitely puts you on the passion list.
Well, yeah, and adding the fact that he knew he wasn't supposed to win that game probably had a lot to do with it, too.
I'm not sure if the networks will confirm this, but I think it's pretty obvious that before the ball game, they tell the quarterbacks and the coaches, we're going to have a camera on you every single second. So if you'll notice, especially during some of the darker moments during that game for the Patriots, Brady was looking down, sitting by himself, and really uninvolved, it seemed. And I think he was caught up in, hey, I can't pick my nose, I can't scratch, I can't do anything without this being on film. But I think it was genuine, like you just said a moment ago, Jeremy, when he was talking like jumping up and down like a little kid, the genuine enthusiasm. And it's been so long for him since he's actually been a champion like that. And then having an exciting, I mean, every time they've won, it's been a tremendously exciting football game. So for a number of different reasons, I think he's one of the more unique athletes in the world. But with a bunch of Seattle fans, you know, the one saving grace for any fan, and I don't know if anybody's discussed this, because they won it last year, I think they're still on house money. You know what I mean? Hey, we won. Nobody's ready to jump off the Space Needle because they have a championship. They do have a very promising team that might win several more games of the same caliber. So both teams should be applauded. It was a fantastic game, and in my opinion, there's a lot of
reason to say, hey, the NFL is strong, it's alive, it's vibrant, and everyone's passionate about it.
Well, and it's funny you mentioned that, because that was actually a point I was going to make, was about that they still are kind of on house money. And for all the supposed bandwagon fans, or even the actual fans, it doesn't matter. If you're a fan of Seattle, if you're looking for excuses, or if you want to try to find some sort of reason why maybe they didn't play up to the level you thought, or why they didn't win the game, three of the four members of the Legion of Boom are going to have off-season surgery, anything from Tommy John to an MCL and a torn labrum. All these guys were playing, you know, at probably 30% or 40%.
And I'm glad you brought that point up, Jeremy. And I think that's why, as a fan of the local team here, I am excited about our new coach, and hopefully he brings that type of mentality to our team. When I read that, you know, Cam Chancellor was playing with a torn MCL, and Richard Sherman, and I mean these guys, that defense. And as we kind of segue hopefully into the impact players or top performers, that entire defense all year for the past 2 years has just been the top performer for Seattle. I mean, they got to do whatever they can to keep that defense in place, because they just epitomize and personify what I think is a defense that can keep you winning championships.
Go ahead, Kevin.
I'm sorry, Jim. I agree with you. But here's, you know, the reality of it is that the business side of it is going to kick in real soon. They have to go down and look at what they're going to have in cap space, money, draft picks, and players that they have to pay. And so hopefully they'll be able to work it out again. I mean, that's what got them back to the Super Bowl. They were able to keep continuity with this particular team. But moving into the offseason, it's a lot of, it's going to be a lot of reworking and restructuring of a lot of things, and what can a player afford to take or not take is going to determine how much of that they can keep together into the next season.
Well, and as you mentioned, Reggie, you know, that is the next little segment we're going to get into, was the top performers of the Super Bowl. Just you know, obviously there was the Brady and Marshawn Lynch's of the world, but you know, who was, we'll kind of go around the room, and, you know, who was your top performer, guy that you just felt exceeded the expectations that you would typically have? Harper, we'll start with you.
Well, the first one that jumps out to me is Marshall, the tall wide receiver from the Seahawks, who hadn't caught a pass prior to that. I mean, who would have expected him to be the top receiver when you got Baldwin and you've got Curse and some other guys? I was surprised that their tight end didn't have hardly anything to do with the ball game. But Marshall's the guy that jumps out immediately for me as being one of those guys that just was above and beyond what the expectations were.
Okay, Coach?
I did O'Harper. I mean, looking at that young man's career, he started in arena football, he went to the CFL, and prior to getting that pickup in Seattle, he was working at Foot Locker and had to get permission from his manager to come down for the tryout. And then to come into the Super Bowl and be able to play the game he did as if he was at practice was quite amazing and impressive to me.
All right, Reggie?
Mine has to be Julian Edelman. I mean, that guy, I think, throughout the playoff push for the Patriots, he had an outstanding game. He just became that go-to guy from the touchdown pass he threw in one of the previous, I mean, he just really stepped up when Tom Brady really needed it.
And it's funny you say that, because as I give my answer for top performers, right after this we'll go into breakout players, and mine's the same person. It's exactly the guy you just said, Reggie. It's Julian Edelman. And you can't argue that Brady makes, you know, some guys look better. He probably makes most guys look better, but I feel like Edelman here not only stepped up to be a top performer, but he's this breakout, because before he was just kind of Wes Welker 2.0, as Amendola's, you know, Wes Welker 3.0. It's just like they were just trying to recycle the same type of player, but they knew they had something special with Edelman. And I don't know if you guys see some of his photo ops as well, but Brady's not the guy with the best hair on that team anymore. Edelman makes us all look bad.
Yeah, I really like his beard. I wish mine would grow that big.
Yeah, I'm afraid I'm a generation behind, or two or 12, because that 1860s look with the short hair and the beard, I'm just not there, guys. I'm just not there. So he can have it. He can claim it. And I agree with you. He did have a tremendous game. He's one of those guys that he's got really good talent. And when you give him the ball in open space, I'm telling you what, one of the best tackling teams in the history of the NFL had a hard time bringing him down. And that just means he's good, very well prepared, slippery, like a fish out of water, you know, tough to tackle. And he made some big plays, and he's got himself a Super Bowl ring that he gets to tote around with him for the rest of his life. And a bad beard.
And then the last thing we'll hit on with the Super Bowl here is just the aftermath of the game. And for the most part, really just the aftermath is where do each of these teams go from here, and where, you know, the state of the NFL at this point. Like, to me, clearly the state of the NFL, with this being one of the best postseasons we've seen as far as competition, even though there was some crazy calls, there was a couple blowouts. For the most part, by the end of the season, I think almost all the questions with how good a team is and where the problem is with a team, I think they were answered for all the teams.
Yeah, the one thing I will say that I worry about, and this is after talking to just a tremendous amount of people that kind of echo the same, whether they're fans of the teams that's winning or not, is that we haven't quite seen of the parity in the league yet that we need to see to keep the general interest. I mean, in this age of PSLs and new stadiums and exorbitant costs and all of these things, right, the scandals and so forth and so on, I think people are just tired of seeing the same teams win over and over and over and over again. And so I don't know, you know, obviously that comes down to GMs and personnel and coaches and sort of and that sort of thing. But I think that's definitely something that we're going to have to keep an eye on here over the next few years.
Yeah, I think definitely so, and I would agree that as much as this is a league of parity, that at least with the Patriots, I haven't seen anybody try to copy that. Now, as far as the copying the Seattle model, obviously Jacksonville and Cleveland come to mind pretty quickly, but they also have ties to this coaching staff, I believe, especially Jacksonville, and now the Falcons will. And on the other side of the break, Harper, can you hang with us for a few more minutes?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. The other side of the break, we'll be back with Falcon Zone, and we'll get into the Seattle coaching tie to the Falcons now. But for the King ATL and Reggie Walker, the coach Haywood Hill, and everybody's favorite 929 The Game on-air talent Harper LaBelle, I'm Jeremy the Impact York. We'll see you on the other side of the break.
Jeremy the Impact York from End Zone here. Would you or your business like to advertise with Endzone? It's easier than you think. With many packages available, we've got the perfect deal to help you promote your business to a whole new audience. All you have to do is contact us at freeendzone@gmail.com for more info and to get started today. Let us help you grow your business.
And if you were here in the studio with us, you'd see eight hands in the air. This is just a fun song to dance along to, I think. But I am your host, Jeremy the Impact York, here for Falcon Zone, joined once again by the King ATLian, Reggie Walker, the coach, Haywood Hill, and everybody's favorite former Falcon tight end, Harper LaBelle. How we doing, guys?
Doing good, Jeremy.
Having a great night. Looking forward to it.
Awesome. Well, we'll jump right into it. First thing off the docket here is we finally have an official head coach here in Atlanta, as former Seattle defensive coordinator Dan Quinn was actually signed, sealed, and delivered, and actually had a press conference the other day, which I don't know if you guys caught, but I was impressed. This guy can at least speak well and handle the Atlanta media.
Yeah, we've been, Falcon fans have been waiting for this announcement for quite some time. I think he's everything. He sounds like he's everything that's advertised. It was real exciting to kind of hear some of what he had to say about his direction for the team. And we're just ready to get started, man. I can't wait.
For myself, I think that I would like for Atlanta, the fans, to be patient with him. I think that, you know, I think we're going to really be able to see what he's able to do with this team in year three of his 5-year deal. I think, you know, he has to go through a lot of sifting first of what he wants and then find it, and then it has to get accustomed to playing and buying into the philosophy of what he has. So I'm looking forward to seeing him in, by year three, what Coach Quinn has really been to do with Atlanta.
You know, that's an interesting perspective and a very unique word, Coach, when you have patience with him. I'm not sure how long the honeymoon's going to last. You never know, but he comes in with an offense that can and should be able to score, unless they just change it. If Shanahan decides to just scrap everything, and who knows, injuries can always affect it all, but really the biggest issue I see is how well will the defense play and will they allow them to be competitive? And if that's the case very early on and some of the changes are made or the guys that they've got right now play better, then hopefully this will be a very short wait. The patience won't need to be as long as you would imagine, and the Falcons can be competitive in the division and hopefully get deep into the playoffs and eventually win one of those Super Bowl rings that Dan has on his finger. You know, I think that's the real issue right now, is how long will it take for the Falcons to get to the same level that the other elite teams in the league that have already won. What do we have to do to be able to get to that level too?
And it's interesting, real quick, Jeremy, before that you said that, Harper, about the ring, and I liken this term to Coach Budenholzer with the Hawks, and everybody's kind of excited and surprised at the same time. But the guy walked in from day one with, you know, 4, 5, 6 different championship rings, and I think that's something that Atlanta hasn't had. They haven't had that coach that can come in, short of maybe Dan Reeves, who's, you know, a long time ago, but that can come in and command that particular fact that, hey, guys, I've done this, and this isn't just 5 years ago. This is last year. So I think we are patient. I think what gives me patience as a fan is understanding that the philosophy changes that we've been looking for are coming to play finally. Let's teach these guys. Let's come in. Let's make the best team out of what we have. Let's get rid of the talent that we don't have and find the talent that we need. Let's really be aggressive and not talk about it. Those are the types of things that he's talked about. Those are the types of things that he has shown up in Seattle that will allow me as a fan to remain patient. I don't expect us to go to the Super Bowl next year, but I do expect to see a difference in the team just based on what he's saying.
Yeah, I think you speak of the culture change, and that's something that all three other teams in the Falcons division, especially Tampa, are trying to implement as well. Because, you know, to take the phrase that you guys said earlier, the honeymoon's kind of over in the NFC South, and we saw what can happen when the entire division can't quite put it together as we did last year. Everybody has problems. It's the perfect time for something like this, for a new regime to come in, and I don't know that he'll necessarily try to build the same defense that he has in Seattle. I think he's going to look at the staff he has here, see the playmakers and the potential here, and you may see a version of it, but I've told a lot of fans, it's not going to be a carbon copy of the Legion of Boom from Seattle.
Well, absolutely not. I mean, that you can't find that type of talent that they have anywhere, but what you can find, and one of the things he spoke about even in his press conference, that I don't think exists, and Coach Hill has kind of spoken on that from a coaching perspective, is he stressed the fact that all the great teams that he's ever been a part of had some an extraordinary level of camaraderie. They liked each other. They were friends. They trusted each other. And I think we can agree that, you know, with the defense and with the team as a whole sometimes over these past many years, you don't really see that. You don't see that type of atmosphere on the sideline. It was very reserved and very, you know, kept under wraps, the guys celebrating and kind of getting the side eye, that type of stuff that I think kind of kills a team's, you know, psyche. He spoke a tremendous amount of times about that. So that's part of that culture change that I'm looking forward to.
Reggie, that's a great, great point. And if I can spend a couple seconds on that, you outside of the military, you're really not going to see that I've got your back and I trust that you've got mine. You certainly don't see it in politics. You don't see it in a lot of the entertainment world, and many people in the business world would rather stab somebody in the back than help them get up and be successful. And I think the Falcons, if you'll allow me to be really blunt, may not have had that the way that they need to. There have been times over the past couple of years where I would only imagine that there's members of the team that are going, our offensive line can't get a first down on 4th-and-1. Our defense can't hold anybody on 4th-and-2. Our secondary can't cover guys well enough, and we don't have a pass rush. There's a lot of doubt. And training camp and the OTAs are going to be the time where the Falcons will have an opportunity to say, here's what we've got. I don't care if you like it, if you don't like it. This is who we got. We're going to be able to trust and depend and count on each other. We're going to be actively different. We're going to prepare differently. We're going to be in the weight room differently. We're going to practice differently than what we have in the past few years. And when you go through some rough spots with guys and you get in a fight and a little tiff, and coach, you know this, sometimes, yeah, it gets where some feelings get hurt. But after a while, you realize, hey, you're all on this team together. So we can use that as a positive as opposed to a negative. And we're not there yet, but we're, I think with the hiring, we're a lot closer than we would have been.
Absolutely, I agree, Hoffman. I do agree. One of the things, as coaches, things that we use as icebreakers, a lot of times we will put players together and we will just do competitive but non-competitive things from the football standpoint, play cards, go bowling, things of that nature. We used to actually practice something called enthusiasm. That was actually a part of practice where we would get the team out, and every time the offense caught a ball, I mean, we jumped around like it was that catch that you needed in the Super Bowl. And so once you build that trust, and the OTAs, again, like you said, is where you're going to build this training camp. You know, training camp is training camp. It's always tough. It's always competitive. But when guys realize that, hey, everybody's out there to make each other better, I think, and I've always said this, you know, you can't beat a football team. You can beat individuals. You can control quarterbacks. You can corral receivers. You can even shut down running backs, but you cannot beat a whole football team. And when you don't know where it's coming from, because there is it's seamless between the starters and the backups, for the lack of better term, it is just hard to whoop a team. And the Patriots prove that year in and year out. You just don't know where that's going to come from. You don't know who's going to step up, because when you walk into that organization, and when you walk into any organization, you should feel like I'm not just here as a backup to someone. I'm here to produce and perform. And you even saw it in the Super Bowl in that very last play. That's how much trust you have to have.
Well, and real quickly, I'll give you a quote from Dan Quinn that the Falcons posted just a few minutes ago on social media, and that is, when he was addressing the fans at the press conference when he said this, and that was, the energy and enthusiasm that you bring to the Atlanta Falcons can be unmatched in terms of the energy I'll try to bring to you as head football coach. That's not just, you know, blowing a lot of smoke or air in the place. I think he believes that, and he's trying to change the culture, like we're saying, and to say we're all in this together.
Well, I mean, look at where he's coming from. He's experienced the 12 for however many years, and he understands that. He gets that, you know what, fans sometimes can change the momentum of a game, and they can get your players more involved than they would typically be. And that's also a call out to our fan base. You know, we've got a mixed bag of people that live here. They're fans of other people, but you know, myself as well as some other fans have vowed you know, that we're going to do whatever it takes to give him just what he's looking for and just what he's accustomed to and been accustomed to in Seattle.
Well, his the rest of his staff is he made some announcements at the thing. Most of them were the slam dunks we already knew about. He will be bringing on offensive coordinator Kyle Shanahan, and the kind of cool thing that he said at the press conference about that was is that they haven't worked together previously, but they've coached against each other enough times to where I believe it was a year or so ago they had a conversation that if they got a chance to work together, they wanted to. So that's kind of how that one took shape. And then obviously the hybrid position that they are creating for former Buccaneers coach Raheem Morris, as I keep hearing he's possibly a defensive back coach, or he may be just some sort of defensive quality control, but he's the assistant head coach who's going to help run Quinn's defense.
Right, right, yeah, and it's weird, even the whole structure of how their coaching staff is set up, and Coach and I kind of talked about this off air, you know, a couple of days ago, it mimics what the organizational, the back office or the front office is being set up, and it's ultimate accountability, but at the same time, I think what you'll find is, and Coach has mentioned this before on some other shows, let the coaches do what they do best, and I think this structure will kind of put people in the places that they're supposed to be, give them free reign in their areas, and let it happen.
Yeah, the job of the NFL head coach really is to coach the coaches. And the assistants are the ones that are actually having a lot of interaction with the players. Now, Dan will probably, especially early on, spend a tremendous amount of time with his guys. He may coach on the defensive line a little bit just for fun and drills, but really his job is to take care of the media, to address all of those non-football issues, and then basically run practice. But I am very surprised that the staff that has been put together with such short notice, without league violations, you know what I'm saying, rules, he got the job Monday. He technically was not allowed to be spoken to prior to that, so for him to be able to get some guys like Raheem, and he kept Keith Armstrong. Keith was looking for work, I guess, but some of the others that he brought in, with Shanahan being one of the big names, it's just a surprise to me that they were, one, still available, and two, so quickly and easily ready to come here without any quote-unquote wink-wink prior conversation. So I think we did pretty well with that.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, special teams coordinator Keith Armstrong is being kept on in the same position. Defensive line coach Brian Cox, which is, I think he's going to do a tremendous job if he gets a couple pass rushers. And wide receiver coach Terry Rubisky, and I believe Wade Harmon as well, the assistant offensive line coach, were all kept on for at least this season.
Yeah, when you stop to consider how little time that he had to create a staff and put it together, there may be some fine tuning and some other guys that he wanted to bring in that will come in next year. But everyone's got a job right now, and you can't leave that as a an option that really worked against the Falcons and taking so long to make this pick. But I know as the head coach, they got their man, they waited for him, he impressed at the conference, and everything that he was able to say, and I think everybody's all on the same page with a little bit of a smile on their face. All the Falcon fans right now are going, okay, now we can start getting ready for these OTAs, the mini camps, obviously training camp later in July. We're ready to go.
Yeah, I found it interesting that Matt Ryan's wife tweeted out a pic of him actually sitting at his computer starting to dissect Kyle Shanahan's playbook. So it's already starting, and you can tell, you know, there's obviously some excitement in the locker room. Trufant has made a couple of statements. Sean Weatherspoon has made some statements, you know, just about the level of excitement that they have about this guy coming in.
I actually read you to kind of correct there. Matt Ryan at his computer, we were actually playing Trivia Crack on Facebook together, and he's actually pretty good at it.
See, that's the Jacksonville fan, and you're trying to distract my guys, man. Come on.
He challenged me. I didn't even know who he was. I didn't know who had sent me the invite till I accepted it.
You sure he didn't have some help from his wife? Because I hear she's pretty stout too, so she's probably smarter than both of you guys together.
Right. I'll believe that.
Well, she definitely is because she married him.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Right.
I do have a question for you, Harper. How long has Coach Trubisky been with the Atlanta organization? With the Falcons?
I want to say 3 years. It might have been longer than that. You got me on a non-Google time where I can't look it up in time to make it sound like I've really got a smart answer for you. But and I'm not sure if this isn't his second go-around at one point or another. Terry's a lifer, man. He's one of those guys that's been in the league. He played years and years ago, and, you know, he has been a coach on – if you look at his resume, there are dozens of different teams where he spent a year or two, maybe three. But, you know, as a real aggressive, smart guy, he's going to help your receivers and just really make them as tough as they possibly can. I think he's a pretty good fit here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think it also seems strategic in Dan Quinn's case. I mean, you keep those guys around that have the ear of the team, if you will. I think the only one that maybe got away from them was Mike Tice. Unfortunately, he moved on to Oakland. But I think with Keith Armstrong and Trubisky and Brian Cox, he definitely kept some players around, or some coaches around, excuse me, that he recognized, or that they recognized the team actually has some confidence in, and they can get these guys' attention.
And, Coach, to help you and Harper out here, our stat guy who will not get fired today because he came up with this one. Trubisky has been with the Falcons as a wide receiver coach since 2008.
Oh, wow. Okay. Thank you for that.
Yeah, I'm way off on my number. Well, here's one of the things, too. You're going to go into a locker room, and you guys mentioned a little while ago the Trufant and the Weatherspoon quotes, and you're going to hear a few things. But I'm going to say, with the exception of maybe one or two guys, that everybody in that locker room is playing for their job right now. And so with that kind of – and he mentioned at the press conference, Dad and Quinn did, about competition. And in many respects, I've listened. I'm a former USC fan. I'm from Los Angeles. And I've heard Pete Carroll say that for a long, long time, not just at SC, but that's kind of his modus operandi. So Dan learned and was very influenced by what Pete did, and it worked. And I think he's going to take what worked in Seattle and put it out here. So there's going to be some guys that, and many Falcon fans and fans throughout the league, will say, that's what I want out of my guy. I don't want my guy to get comfortable. I want him to fight for his job each and every day, whether it be in practice or on game day. Now,
well, you know what,
Harper,
you sound like a broken record in that that has been the mantra of Coach Hill about the Falcons in particular. We've had some very heated conversations about that very fact, that he felt like that's what was missing with this team, is that everybody got comfortable. And Arthur Blank even said it when asked about the Julio Jones extension. He said, hey, that's going to be up to the coach. And I agree with you. There are going to be some guys that aren't going to be in a Falcon uniform that we're going to be surprised, I believe.
And the ones that do, I think people will be shocked, not because they're back, but how good they are. Because I think his eye for talent and his ability to get guys to play at 99 or 100% will be one of the key factors that will keep a lot of guys around. I know on the Mark and James show on 92.9, they've been talking all week about, we need Ndamukong Suh, we got to get Suh, we need him. I'm going to argue against that right now. We talked about the cap a little bit earlier. I'd rather have a lot of good guys than one great guy, because I can do a lot of things with a lot of good guys. And if one of them goes down, I should be able to have another good guy to replace him. And that's the thing with the cap and how many years you're going to have a guy, and then you throw in injuries, and then you go, how do people get along and work with one another? I just think that we're going to get bigger. I think we're going to get a lot longer. You know, we're going to go with a bunch of guys that are 6'5", where we've had guys that are 6'2". They may not be great yet, but hopefully in the next 4 or 5 years, those third, fifth,
6-round draft picks and a lot of free agents are going to really pan out and be folks just like what Seattle did that are playing hard. They got a chip on their shoulder. They're glad to be in the league. They're grateful to be on the team, and they're going to fight like the dog for you.
Yeah, I almost called into that radio show, but I was at a place where I wouldn't get good reception, and so many people were agreeing with them that I felt it wasn't the right time. But maybe next time I will call in, because I definitely agree with you on that one, that Ndamukong Suh would have fit maybe Mike Smith's scheme. I don't know where his place would be in Dan Quinn's scheme, because it involves a lot different focus as far as the guys up front where Ndamukong Suh would be playing. Plus, like you said, he would eat up enough of the cap to where I don't know that you could really afford to hang on to some of the other pieces that are necessary.
Now, I will say this about Ndamukong Suh, because I stand a little bit on the other side of the coin. I will say this, Harper, you gave me probably the most compelling argument of why we shouldn't get Ndamukong Suh, but as to why we should, you put that guy in the middle and you don't have to worry about the middle, period. I mean, so there's an obvious need for a guy like that, but I'm starting to understand and maybe slide a little bit more towards your take, Harper, in that, hey, I'd rather have more guys than that one guy, but my goodness, if we can't get him, I mean, who wouldn't go get him? You'd be a fool not to.
Yeah, Jeremy, I'm going to have to put you under the table and maybe run over you a few times and go backwards. He could fit on anybody's roster at any time. That's how good he is. However, I'm not going to forfeit or sacrifice or hamstring my club in a time where I really need a lot of talent defensively. And if he's going to play for the same money that he was getting in Detroit, then I think we should sign him yesterday, today, and tomorrow. But I just don't think that's going to be – I think he's going to do, like in basketball, a max-out contract. This is going to be his money-making contract here, and I would hate to have to play against him. Reggie's got a great point. He's a terrific guy. But I have so many other needs, and especially if you do it like what the Patriots have done over the last 15 years, I'm not going to overpay anybody. I'm going to pay everybody a little bit above normal or average, and I'm going to have a lot of happy people on my roster, and because I'm going to have a lot of talent. But nobody except for Brady is, and even Brady could be making a lot more money than what he is if he were on another club. But they're all playing for that same goal. They're all well paid, but nobody's overpaid. And I think if the Falcons, and they've got their front office with Thomas Dimitroff, and then you throw in Pioli, that's kind of the mantra that they've had for the past 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, but the difference with the Patriots, I'll say this, is that they have that carrot. If I was one of those players entering free agency right now, and I may be able to take a little less money and go play for the Patriots versus take a whole lot of money and go play for, you know, the Raiders, I'm going to the Patriots because I'm getting a chance to win a Super Bowl ring, and I don't think Atlanta has that argument quite yet. But to your point, I feel the same exact way, and a lot of people get upset with me when I say this, but I feel the same way about Julio Jones. I think he's going to want max money, and I'm just not sure that he's that guy you want to pay max money to. And maybe I'm the only one, but I agree with your point on that, Harper.
Yeah, and in the next couple of weeks, we'll be getting into the Ndamukong Suh debate for sure. Coach, was I about to cut you off there?
One of the things I did want to add, though, and as I listen to both sides of this, again, it boils down to the cap. And I do agree, Atlanta has a lot of holes that they have to fill going into this draft. I think that the upside to it is that there are a lot of players. And I said this at the beginning of the season for the Falcons, that I didn't think that they had a personnel issue. I just think a lot of players did not play. And so now, with Coach Quinn coming in, these guys that were on the sideline now will get an opportunity to display that talent. So it's going to be quite interesting to see what he does with this, and more especially for those players that are currently on that roster now.
Absolutely. The Jonathan Massaquas, the Jock Smiths who sat on the practice squad. I mean, you're right, Coach. A ton of those players that I feel like probably could have made some impact that just weren't given the opportunity.
Well, I like to give one in particular. Let's talk about the third-string center. I mean, you know, who would have ever thought that, you know, he would have stepped up and played as well as he did for the remainder of the season, but you would have not saw this player had it not been for some injuries.
Oh, Mr. James Stone, absolutely. And he's, I mean, you got Mr. Brawley coming, or Joe Hawley, we call him Brawley, coming back next year. And he's not a lock, in my opinion, for the starting position, because James Stone held that position down quite well.
Yeah, that is definitely true. There are a handful of, not just because of the new head coach and new coaches, but there's a lot of positions that are going to be wide open come spring and summer ball. Real quickly, in the last couple minutes we have here, I did want to hit on, I didn't know if you guys saw Harry Douglas's new talent or new thing he's doing besides playing football. He is actually on 92.9 The Game, as well as you are, Harper. Don't know if you've seen him around the studio, but apparently on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 10 a.m. to noon, he's on as a part of one of their as one of their programs. Have you seen him walking around up that way?
No, not yet. I have not, but I'm mostly on the weekends, so I would look
That's
forward
true.
To having Harry on any time. I like what he does on the field, and I've heard him before. He's very articulate, and he can break down a play and do it as good as anybody I've heard. So I would think that, well, just more competition for me. I got to get better at what I do. Just got to do it.
Yeah, Harry's also a force in the community, man. He's one of those guys that, you know, whenever you hear about many of the Falcons players, or any of the Falcons players for that matter, being out in the community doing good things, meeting with the fans, whatever it takes, he's always the guy you hear the most about. So I'm hoping we keep Harry around for a while.
Well, and him taking this job with the local radio station, and the as it was announced the other day, the official Falcons radio broadcast partner, 92.9 The Game. So kudos to you guys on that one as well. But with him signing with 92.9, I would imagine that it would help hopefully keep him in town for at least a couple more years.
Hey, real quick, Jeremy, while we got time, I'd like to get Harper's Mel Kiper pick for who do you think the Falcons take in the first round?
Wow. With number 8 being one of those things where you're just probably thinking is the 6th going to be gone? Will 7 trade up like they did last year? Remember, Buffalo moved up and down a little bit with Cleveland being all over the place. This might be, and I'm not going to give you a name because I just don't have one on the off the top of my head. I really don't. But I,
you think they go defense?
I think without a doubt, unless there's a tremendous offensive lineman available. I think with number 8, you don't go after Gurley or one of the great backs, the guy from Wisconsin or anything. You wait for the second round for that, if it's available, and then that's the direction you want to go. I think Steven Jackson's contract, if we don't pick him up, that'll save about $2.5 million off the cap minimal. But you got to have a running back. You need to have a beast mode. You got to have somebody who can protect Matt on blitz coverages, and that'll be a priority. I'm not sure if it's the number 1 pick, but if they don't go running back with somebody in the 3rd round, they better sign somebody as a free agent. Here's another thing. Just throw this out, Reggie. You may want to trade down to 14, keep your number 1, and get a number 2 for this year as well. That might be a way that we go as well. I'm not sure.
Well, hopefully Noisegate doesn't force us to do that.
Yeah, and we'll talk – I know, Reggie, you don't want to talk much about that, but we'll talk about that one next week as well. But I'll just throw this name out here. It's on Todd McShay's, who's the other ESPN draft expert besides Mel Kiper. It was on his latest mock draft. He's got Fowler, the defensive end out of Florida, and I think we would welcome him with probably a parade.
Yeah, I've seen Fowler, and I've seen some that say Amari Cooper, if Oakland doesn't take him at number 4. So it's been some,
yeah.
People have been all over the board on that one.
Yeah, Harry might not have a job if we get Amari, but that to me is a real strong indicator that either Julio or Roddy will be gone, maybe even both. That's what I would think. But I wouldn't go number 1 unless he was available.
because right now, what's the biggest weakness on the team? We don't have a pass rusher, so I would go Fowler before anybody else, unless there's just this stud killer offensive lineman that we need to put a Sam Baker can't play and then have somebody to be a bookend for Matthews.
Right, who I found out had a plantar fasciitis issue or injury. I think he tore it in that final game. So he's also dealing with that in the offseason as well. So that's unfortunate for Mr. Matthews.
But I think
that's
bounce
a
back.
Slow injury to recover from. He'll bounce back, but I'm just telling you, that's you can't think about walking for a couple of weeks. He'll be strong as an ox with the bench press and probably some nose breakers. Coach, got to get him in the weight room for all upper body stuff, but he won't be doing anything with his feet for a long while.
Quite a long while.
Well, and hopefully the word of the year for the Falcons will be that word you used earlier, Coach, patience. And hopefully they have enough patience to let him heal properly before putting him back on the field.
Well, these PSLs might shred some of that patience word.
How many are you going to buy, Coach? Four? Five of them?
I wish I could. But the thing is, if you can't hold on to the seats all year for other events, it's going to be a long time before you ever see any money back for those seats.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that one. But that's going to do it for us this week. Appreciate everybody tuning in. Before we get out of here, some other programming notes from Impact Media. There will be the season wrap-ups for Jaguar Zone and End Zone the SEC will be coming out sometime next week, so stay tuned for those. In case you guys missed it a couple weeks ago, through Mark Cooper of the ATL Falcoholics, I joined their charity 5K team. We'll be running on February 21st to help raise awareness and raise some money for the homeless of Atlanta. So if any of our fans or anybody wants to donate, you can hit any of us up through the show. I'll be posting the links online to my personal page on it. And over the weekend, it was a ridiculous weekend that I got practically no sleep from, but it was worth it. On Saturday night, I was able to catch a friend of the show, Connor Christian, and his band, the Southern Gothic, at the Buckhead Theater. And it had been many, many years, probably 7 or 8 years since I've seen him live. And it was good to catch up, and it was a great show. And we wish the best for Connor as they kicked off the tour for 2015. And they will be back this summer promoting the new album. But you guys got anything else? Did we miss anything?
No, I think we covered it all. Thanks, Harper, for joining us today.
My pleasure, guys. I greatly appreciate it and always look forward to the invite. Thank you.
And I will be reaching out to you for that golf match as soon as we get a little bit more warmer weather, so stay tuned.
Absolutely.
I don't know about warmer weather. I'd play in this.
Hey, Reggie, maybe we can get Icky down for it as well.
Absolutely. He's planning on coming down in the April or May time frame, so it'd be fun to get him out there, Mr. Cold Cuts.
Hey, that would definitely be worth it. But definitely, Harper, we appreciate you being on with us, and look forward to hanging out away from the show here hopefully soon. And are you going to be on 92.9 this weekend?
Yeah, actually, I'm going to have Steve Rabel, the play-by-play guy for the Seattle Seahawks. He's a former Georgia Tech guy. He was one of the first guys to actually sign with the Seahawks, played their very first game. And now he's the radio voice along with Warren Moon. I'm going to ask him about the game and if he said, oh, no, like I did, and also find out if he's got some insight on Dan that we don't know. Just some personal, what do you think of this guy and what's he going to bring to Atlanta? So that'll be on Saturday late in the afternoon. And I'm working on Stacey James, the media director for the Patriots, guy I've known ever since he was an intern here with the Falcons. And so we got a couple guys lined up. It'll be a fun weekend.
I know I'll be listening, and I hope everybody else will too. But for the King ATLian, Reggie Walker, the coach, Haywood Hill, and everybody's favorite former Falcons tight end, Harper LaBelle, I'm Jeremy the Impact York. We'll see you guys next week.
It's funny because it's true.